Today's bonus AvWeb AudioCast, in association with our sister publication, IFR Magazine, is brought to you by the Bose Aviation Headset 10. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. AvWeb's Glenn Pugh on special assignment from IFR Magazine recently caught up with Leonard Kirk of the Aviation Technology Division at the University of Alaska. In the next few minutes, Kirk offers his insight into the Capstone Project. Kurt's perspective offers a capstone refresher, history and current status, as well as the program's capabilities and equipment, plus an outlook on progress toward comprehensive rollout in the lower 48. We start with Leonard giving us a rundown on what position he holds and what he's been up to for the past few years.
I came on board full-time with the University of Alaska in 1999 to coordinate the university's efforts with the Capstone Project and coordinate contracts with the FAA and manufacturers of the equipment.
What exactly is Capstone? What benefits does it offer to the general aviation community?
Capstone is the name that covers the project. Capstone evolved as an investment in safety. Capstone involves a number of technologies, GPS for navigation, terrain database for terrain avoidance, ADS-B for traffic identification and so forth. Puts it all together under one umbrella to improve the safety of operations of aircraft in the state of Alaska.
How long did the program run in Alaska?
Well, it's still running. The program started in 99. We installed the first prototype equipment in the University of Alaska's Cessna 180 in February of 2000. And by March of 2000, we had an STC for the equipment and an install process. And an approved model list to allow us to go out and install a number of aircraft. And from 2000 through 2003, we installed a total of 208 aircraft in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta in western Alaska. Beginning in 2003, we began phase two of Capstone, which is installing equipment with WAS capability and other capabilities in southeast Alaska. And we're finishing up the last installs in May of 2007 in that part of the project. And we'll continue to measure and monitor and maintain the equipment as part of Capstone through December 31st of 2008.
Now, in your estimation, what were some of the major challenges and successes seen by the program?
Well, the biggest success seen by the program is the reduction in the accidents, in which is what we were looking for. Going in the front door, we did a baseline study, looked at all the accidents and incidents and everything that happened in the Capstone test area. In the 10 years prior to Capstone, we felt that we'd get about a 28% reduction in accidents with the use of the technology in Capstone. After 5 years of working in the Capstone project, we actually achieved a 48% reduction in accidents in the Capstone test area, which was significant. And the real important part of that is the kind of accidents we quit having were the CFED accidents and mid-airs or the kind that had contributed to the high fatality rate. So that was the great success for us.
CFED accidents, controlled flight into terrain?
Yes, uh-huh.
Do you have any idea when something like this might be coming to the lower 48? What's the pace of progress and what we can expect?
Well, we can expect to come to the lower 48 because it already has. The fleet at Prescott campus for Amarillo Aeronautic University in Prescott, Arizona, is already equipped with ADS-B and a Capstone-like avionics suite in the cockpit and ground-based transceivers and flight monitoring equipment. The same is true of Amarillo Aeronautical University's fleet in Daytona Beach, Florida, with ground-based transceivers supported by the FAA. And there are ground-based transceivers, which is part of the Capstone developed system up and down the east coast of the U.S. I think it's also important to note that Capstone is, or the technology developed as part of Capstone, has gone well beyond the borders of the United States. There's ADS-B being used in Australia. There's a good part of the avionics we developed here being used in China. There are 100 and some airplanes with the Central Aviation Flight University of China using this equipment. Canadian government has just made a recent decision to put it in the Hudson Bay area of Canada.
How do pilots benefit from using it? What sort of equipment do they need to have on board?
Well, the equipment on board the aircraft that is most beneficial to the pilot is a multifunction display, which gives them great situational awareness. And the multifunction display has the ability to display terrain, a terrain model that will give them terrain warnings when they've got rising terrain or terrain that's hazardous to their flight path. It allows them to display other traffic, other ADS-B-equipped aircraft to give them alert to traffic that's going to be in the area. And it also allows them to display weather in the cockpit through flight information services. METAR, TAF-4, and NEXRAD radar into the cockpit of the aircraft.
I see. So to make it really a nice widespread implementation, is it necessary that the entire fleet be equipped with the ADS-B, the capstone, the multifunction display equipment?
Well, ideally, you would want as many aircraft as possible equipped with it, because that's the way aircraft can see each other, is if they're all equipped. The more aircraft that are equipped, the more safety gains we have, because there's more aircraft have the ability to avoid hazardous terrain in periods of bad weather or low light and that sort of thing.
If I'm flying along and I'm capstone equipped, I have the benefit, all the benefits there, which include seeing other capstone equipped aircraft. But if another aircraft isn't capstone equipped, I won't pick it up. Is that, that's the case?
Depends on the area. In Anchorage right now, you would pick it up because of a product called TISB. TISB is Traffic Information Service Broadcast. That means that all the targets that Anchorage Center has are rebroadcast to the ground-based transceiver to my aircraft. So not only do I see the capstone equipped aircraft, or the ones equipped with ADS-B, I see all the other aircraft that are being worked by Anchorage Center.
Are you aware of any sort of schedule for deployment of that down for the rest of us down in the lower 48?
Well, there's been lots of discussion on deployment for the lower 48. There's just been recently formed a national SBS office, which stands for Surveillance and Broadcast Services. That national office will be working on ADS-B issues for the contiguous 48 states. And so forth. And as I understand it, the FAA has chosen Vinny Capizzuto to head that office. And I don't know what their time schedules are at this point. This was just newly formed office, and they will be working that issue.
We'll be back with more of our bonus audio cast in association with IFR Magazine in just a moment.
The Bose Aviation Headset 10. For 5 years, the number one choice in Professional Pilot Magazine survey. Enjoy an unmatched combination of comfortable fit, noise reduction, and clearer audio with 50% less clamping force than most conventional ANR headsets. Learn more at Bose.com/headset. Fly with the Aviation Headset 10 for 30 days risk-free. Order now and receive free shipping. And learn about the convenient payment plan. Visit Bose.com/headset.
Now back to our conversation with Leonard Kirk of the Aviation Technology Division at the University of Alaska, talking about the Capstone Project.
Is there specific training for pilots involved? I mean, these days it seems that, you know, we've got lots of Avidyne and Garmin Wonder boxes up there, but pilots still need to sit down and learn how those work before they can actually get in the airplane go. I'd assume it's sort of similar with the capstone equipment. Is that about right?
Well, that's one of the things that the University of Alaska has done here, is work with the operators with capstone to develop training programs. We've also worked with the manufacturers in capstone to develop avionics training devices. We actually have the certified equipment mounted in boxes that we can use in the classroom, where we can fly it using Microsoft Flight Sim to drive it, so we can do all the scenarios, load the flight plans, do the train awareness functions and everything in the classroom, spend time in the classroom learning all the functionality, the knobology, will, of the equipment, so that when we go to the airplane and fly it, it's a tool, not something that, gee, how does this work or what does that knob do? That's extremely important from a safety standpoint, that we do the ground training and have good knowledge on the use of the avionics before we go fly an airplane.
So do you think a real rollout of it would involve some sort of coordinated effort to train folks?
Yes, there should be, and I think the best way to train folks, the FAA through AFS 800 has a product called FITS, which is FAA Industry Training Standards. It was designed to develop training and deliver training for technologically advanced aircraft by virtue of putting the glass in the cockpit, the moving map, the WAS-enabled GPS, and so forth. Even if we're retrofitting an old airplane, we're making it a technologically advanced aircraft, adding this equipment. And I really believe that the FITS training concept is developed by University of North Dakota, the Center of Excellence for General Aviation Research, and the FAA is really the right way to go. And I think that provides the good foundation for using this equipment properly in the national airspace system.
Right now, is there any good idea on the cost of the equipment to outfit an aircraft? Would this be something that a private pilot would want to do for themselves if they, you know, weren't rolling in dough? Or is it something that would really be focused more towards commercial flying?
Well, initially, the installs for the capstone development was done in what is primarily a commercial fleet in western Alaska, because we have an area out there that depends on air transportation as their primary means of transportation, because they don't have a road or railroad or any of that kind of infrastructure. but it was installed in primarily in single-engine Cessnas and Pipers, everything from 172s through 206s, 207s, et cetera. It's performed and done very well in that fleet, and there are people in Alaska operating that class of aircraft that have purchased it on their own as private pilots to use that stuff. And always the desire is to get the cost low enough and keep it low enough that we everybody that can get the benefits of the safety gained by using this kind of equipment.
I don't mean to put you in an area where you don't know the answer, but I'm curious myself. Do you have any idea what the target price might be for these things or where they are at this time?
Well, the price runs all over the place, and I'm not trying to be evasive here, depending on what level of equipage you want and what you want to be able to do with it. We equipped a number of aircraft with the moving map, the GPS navigator, the data link, and so forth, for about $14,500 an airplane in phase one, which provided them that was the installation cost, antennas, labor, all those things that went involved. The cost goes up from there to several times that amount if you're putting in a multi-redundant system in an IFR aircraft where you have displays on both the pilot and the co-pilot side and so forth. So, you know, it's, say, a price is going to depend on the aircraft and how you're going to use it.
Right, right. Finishing up, do you think that right now there are any significant competing technologies that are out there, anything that might put a crimp on the long-term viability of a program like this, or do you think this is where the future of situational awareness is headed?
Well, I think the future is headed this way. I mean, ADS-B, which is only one component of Capstone, ADS-B is a term used for automatic dependent surveillance broadcast. That can be accomplished through 10-9 extended squitter, through a universal access transceiver, or by very high-frequency data links and so forth. The ability to get information from an aircraft and to an aircraft is extremely important. I think ADS-B is here for a long, long time. It's the primary technology, and the kind of displays you put with it is going to depend on the manufacturing industry. Certainly there's Aviadyne, there's Garmin, there's Shelton. There will be a number of systems out there that will compete for that marketplace, but ADS-B will be one of the tools tied to it.
So what do you think are some of the remaining stumbling blocks that we need to overcome to see this really widespread in the fleet?
The main thing to overcome is where we are. We're all used to the technology we have, and there's an expense to move to the new technology. If I've got an NDB or an ADF receiver in my aircraft, and a VOR receiver, and things that all work, why do I want to give that up in favor of something else? And so that's the main thing is, you know, when I started flying in 1964, we had a four-course range. And we didn't want to give up our range because, there's no ranges left. So we had to make that transition. But, you know, when we went from four-course ranges to VORs, we are certainly much better. Aviators had more better tools to work with. So
just a matter of time, money, investment, and really seeing the real benefits come through. But as far as that, is there any infrastructure on the ground that needs to be accommodated, or is it all just aircraft-based?
No, it isn't all aircraft-based. Certainly on the ground, there's ground-based transceivers that get information from the aircraft that can be displayed at centers for using it for control purposes, for surveillance. The ground-based transceivers are the things that can send information back to the aircraft. There needs to be more of those installed. And like I say, we have a number of them in Alaska. There's some in Arizona. There's some up the East Coast from Virginia down through Miami. As time goes along, there's going to be more added to Pennsylvania, Oregon, Colorado. Those people are working. And now the Helicopter Association International is working on a memorandum of understanding to deploy these ground-based transceivers on the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. So as these things proliferate, the usability over brighter areas and make it more desirable to have the equipment.
Now, how do you think the interaction will go regarding controllers-pilots interface when pilots are equipped with this extra information?
So far, the reaction has been very good. We haven't seen any problems between the controllers and the pilots in Alaska that are using the system. I think they've all been pretty happy with the improved situational awareness on both sides. The controllers can see more airplanes in places where they couldn't before, because ADS-B is in a lot of places where there is no radar. Mm-hmm. So it gives them more surveillance capability, and that's a good thing.
You've been listening to a bonus audio cast from AvWeb and IFR Magazine featuring Leonard Kirk of the Aviation Technology Division at the University of Alaska. Read more about this story and find other informative and educational features for the accomplished pilot by subscribing to IFR Magazine. You can find them online at ifr-magazine.com. Comments on this audio cast are welcome at audionews@avweb.com. This report was brought to you by the Bose Aviation Headset 10. Visit bose.com/headset. I'm Mike Blakeney for AvWeb Audio. Thanks for listening.